And as always, a very warm welcome to this week's Life Issues. Now, I grew up in a charismatic Pentecostal tradition of Christianity. As a consequence, we were encouraged to value the spontaneous expression of prayer and worship. And although a daily quiet time of prayer and Bible reading was an expected discipline, if I'm honest, we kind of looked down on liturgical patterns and monastic rules as being a bit formulaic, a bit thing of rote, not really as spiritual as the spontaneous. Well, as I grew older, I came to realise that such a perspective was a little bit naive, and that there was, and indeed is, a depth and majesty in liturgy used as intended, and also that the praise song, prayer, worship song sandwich of my own tradition could be just as formulaic, just as rote. But I also started to realise that, well, perhaps, what if some of the inconsistency of Christian walk that I saw in myself and others was in part because of the relaxed attitude towards spending time with God that the I can pray anytime and He is always with me perspective generates? I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the and value the flexibility and creativity of spontaneity, and I am grateful that I can pray and come into the Lord's presence anywhere and that He is always with me. But in years gone by, the idea of the monastic rule of life provided a framework and a discipline and a focus through the day that specifically broke the day to orientate thinking towards our Father who art in heaven. So given that the Bible tells us to draw aside, to go into our room, to meditate on God's word, to be still and know, what if we could embrace a rule for life that balanced the best of historical practice and the freedom of spontaneous spirituality? Maybe then, to quote a monk from years ago, our cell really would teach us everything we need to know. Well, Emma Timms is the founder of The Prayer Orchard. Theprayerorchard.com is the website. She's an enthusiast, a passionate enthusiast indeed, for the idea of Christian contemplation and is the author of Faith Habits and How to Form Them, 21 Seasonal Practices to Strengthen Your Spiritual Life. If you'd like to track that book down, well, it's published by SPCK and I heartily recommend it. She joins me today to explore the role and the value of a rule of spiritual practices in our daily and in our seasonal life. Emma, welcome to Life Issues.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Can we start with, well, at the very beginning then, let's start with what we mean. What do we mean by a rule of life? What is it?
So I think the word rule can trip us up a little bit from the beginning, and we can think a bit like we're back at school. But what a rule really is a set of rhythms and practices that are pre-decided that we stick to that help provide support for our life with God, something to help us flourish, something we can lean on in hard times, and to provide form and shape to our days.
And it is that, I suppose, that structure, that discipline that perhaps some of the traditions, some of the denominations, some of the developments in how we express faith that we have moved, we've shied away from because it does feel very sort of forced to some people. But you have a different perspective about it.
Yeah, well, I think that you've brought a really important point up there. If it is something that's being forced on you and you're having to do and it becomes just sort of dead tradition that has no life in it, then that's probably not going to lead us any closer to God. But my way of looking at it would be a rule of life that you prayerfully design that fits the life that you're actually living and helps support become the person God is calling you to be. So it's more something that is full of life and bringing life than something that is dead and draining life.
I suppose my initial experience of this and my initial thoughts about this many years ago now was talking to someone who was part of a non-cloistered monastic order. And they talked about their rule of life and how it meant that no matter what the day, no matter what they were doing, no matter what was planned for the day, at a certain time or at certain times through the day, they would stop and they would orientate themselves through some spiritual expression towards God. That is a very old idea, isn't it? I mean, historically, that's been knocking around for a while.
Yeah, that kind of fixed hour prayer, you know, all the ones with all the different names. Yeah, that would be very old. And I think we can learn from that, but that's not necessarily going to work for, you know, the stay-at-home mum, the busy nurse, whoever it is. You know, you can't really sort of not feed your baby because it's time to pray. So I think we have to look at how it would fit our lives as an individual. Yes.
And that is a very important part about what you are espousing here, because as I say, you are passionate about this idea of Christian contemplation, but it is about fitting it in with the other stuff that we've learnt as well, not just imposing the regulation, but understanding the heart of God in this. How would you sum up the heart of God in this for us?
Well, it makes me think of Romans 12:2, being transformed by the renewing of our minds. And I think a lot of us want that. We see where we are and where we'd like to be, but we can get a little bit stuck on how we close that gap. And yes, there's going to church and yes, there's reading our Bible, but there's so many ways in how God has made us that can help us with that transformation. And so I think that's the kind of the starting point.
So I come to you and I say, Emma, I think I want to apply some form, find some form of a rule of life. And we'll talk later about the different practices that could involve and indeed how I actually pin it down to personalize it for me. But first and foremost, why do I want one? Why do I want a rule of life applied to me?
Yeah, I think that's the most important question that each person has to answer. Thinking about where we want to go, what God is calling us to, the things we want to see in our lives, and then from that place thinking, what things could I put in to help me do that? So for example, you may feel that you want to be more present in prayer, more present to the needs of others, more present to God, and a practice that is going to help you become more present could be a tool to get you there. So you kind of start with the end in mind and think, okay, what could support this? Actually bring that transformation in my life.
Does kind of go a bit countercultural though, doesn't it, this idea? Because we are increasingly used to an on-demand life, whether it's in what we watch in the telly or how quickly we can get our shopping delivered from the supermarket, or we're used to being able to structure everything to suit us. I get a sense that the heart of what you are putting forward is about prioritization of God in our life rather than prioritization of ourselves.
Yeah, and I think that the amazing thing is when we prioritize God, then we become who we really want to be, and we get that aligned, cohesive life, and we're actually more free than ever. So you get there eventually, but yeah, the way is maybe not what's most popular.
Does it still fit though? And then to a millennial or a Gen Z psyche, does this actually, has it still got relevance?
Yeah, I really think it does, because I think the difference is if you are living in a monastery, in a rule of life, a community rule of life where you all do the same things, then that is really only suited to that setting. But as an individual, you can look at your circumstances, your capacity, your dreams are things God is calling you to, and then you can build practices in around that, around your actual reality. And that's how it becomes relevant to the 21st century.
And it is very much about identifying those building blocks and then building it. But we're all very good at starting something, Emma. I mean, I'm brilliant at not following through on things. Absolutely brilliant at it. If there was a gold medal award at the Olympics for not following, I'd win it every time. We're all very good at starting with really good intentions, especially at the beginning of the year and all that sort of thing. How do you build this structure to ensure that it is something that you'll still be doing 6 months from now, let alone, you know, a couple of days from now?
I think starting with things that are achievable and realistic, having some support, so maybe having a friend or a spiritual director that can help you as you begin to put things into place. And then for not everything to be solitary, some of our daily practices will be, you know, if we wake up early and have a little practice or right before we go to bed, it makes sense they're maybe more solitary. But having weekly or monthly times in community with other people can really help with that kind of iron sharpening iron and strengthening each other. It's the spiritual journey is not a solitary one. And we're also very individualistic as a society. So there's that to come against as well.
And you don't have to be doing the same spiritual practices as everybody else when you to actually come in community or come together in community. It's about the principle of I'm putting something in place, you're putting something in place. It's that principle that binds us rather than we're doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah, so I'm in part of a lay monastic order called the Order of the Mustard Seed, and it's a global order. And we orient our rule of life around 3 values and 6 practices. Now, we agree on those, but the way everybody expresses them across the world is so different. So, for example, one of them is creativity. So for somebody, that might be really artistic expression. For me, that would be more around movement and how I communicate. So we both have the same value, the same practice, but then how we actually outwork it is going to look really different.
Well, you're listening to UCB Life Issues. I'm Paul Hammond, and my guest this week is Emma Timms. She is the author of Faith Habits and How to Form Them. You can find her book published by SPCK. You can find it online. And we're talking today about this idea of a rule of life, of building spiritual practices into our lives that actually prioritize, draw us closer to, and enable a deeper understanding of God's will, purpose, and presence in how we live. So, given that you have written a book that suggests there are 21 practices that we could engage with, let's talk about some of them, because there are different, as you said, different spiritual practices available to us. Can you give us some examples that might just draw us into the sense of it?
I think just the way that people are different, you know, we look different, we like different things. I think God has made us to know him in different ways. And so it's okay that there is this variety. And it's okay if, you know, your friend Joe has a really successful classical quiet time and every time you sit down, your mind bounces all over the place and that doesn't suit you, that's fine.
Oh, you've met me before, haven't you? You really have.
So yeah, I think first of all, saying that variety is fine, it's good. So yeah, I think some spiritual practices that would be a good starting point would be something that helps you ground into the presence of God, something that helps you become present. So I'm obviously a movement teacher. So the body and the breath is something that I am speaking to hundreds of people about every week. But the reason it's such a powerful tool is the body and the breath are always right where we are. So we're breathing now. Your body is in your seat now. So immediately when you turn from your busy mind to your body or your breath, you become more present. So anything like a few breaths, noticing your seat, anything like that to start prayer can just help us settle the mental chatter and become more aware of God in the moment, not the concept of God or the idea of God, but God with us now. So anything around that, I think, is a really fantastic practice, not widely done in the church at large from what I've seen. Just not seen everything, but a really good one.
So it brings to my mind the image of someone in a meditative state or a meditative place. And I mean, sometimes we have a moment of meditation that we include in one of the programs that I do. And often I will invite people just to take a breath, to settle their heart, to still their mind, and to hear. We then play a led meditation of what something God might say to them. It is that sort of pausing And I wonder if, with all these practices, that element of going busy, 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 busy life, and breathe and pause is a part of it.
Yeah, I think it's a really important part of it. The other thing I'd love to say, some people really struggle to sit still. You know, we have a wide spectrum of neurodiversity as well.
Yes.
We just don't all operate the same way. So another thing that you can do is make that have some movement in. So whether you bring that into a bit of like a mat-based movement or you go for a walk, for some people, that's going to be much better because some people's stillness makes things worse. And so it is worth saying if you, you know, with a breath, with whatever, it just doesn't help you. Try taking it outside or into some movement or into a swimming pool, and you may find that that works better for you. Again, one's not better than the other. We're just all different.
When we talk about this sort of stuff, I mean, there are echoes of mindfulness in it. There are echoes of meditation in it, as I said. And for some people, that can be, when we think about the Christian faith and Christian theology, that can be an unsettling space. You know, if I'm going to focus on my body, focus on my breathing, focus on stilling my thinking and create that space to engage with God, then am I maybe stepping over the line into things that other religions and so on that I shouldn't connect with? What's your take on that?
I think that's really understandable. I think people really want to do the right thing. People want to honor God and stay within practices that feel safe and familiar, of course. But I think it's more about our perspective and our intention of what we are doing. And if we are aiming to focus more on God, that's something that is biblical. And if we need a little bit of help, certainly in the modern day, from our breath or our body, we shouldn't be afraid of that. And actually, I'm quite surprised we aren't the most embodied faith in the world with the incarnation and the divine taking on flesh and eating and drinking and living and dying. And you think of the sacraments and communion. It does surprise me we aren't more embodied, but I think because there are other spiritual sorts of places we might see these things, we can worry. But if something is true, it's always going to have been true, and other people are going to notice it. So I don't think we need to be afraid if other people have picked up on something positive as well.
Good point. And it is, as you say, a case that an awful lot of these practices, they have been knocking around the church for millennia. We just haven't necessarily in this modern age, as maybe in part because of the way the Western church has structured itself around its thinking and reasoning and so on over the recent decades, we've kind of stepped away from this. But the essence of who we are as corporeal beings in God's presence, I mean, it's no different to how it ever was.
No, and I mean, if you're walking around completely aware of the presence of God all the time, you might not need to, but I know that for me, like, my mind is so busy and distracted with the 10,000 things I need to do. I need a bit of help and support to help me pray and to help me focus. So even, you know, something like a journal can be helpful for some people. Again, it's another way to just focus within to the moment. So I think it's about finding what's supportive. And actually, if something doesn't sit well with you, it's fine not to do it, because there's so many things you can choose from.
And are some things, and there are lots of different practices, and you sum them up in your book, Faith Habits and How to Form Them. You go through a whole load of different practices that people might engage with, might take on board. But are there some which we might say, well, this is every day. You do this every day without fail, come hell or high water, this is a part of my day. And then there are some things that are maybe seasonal. You know, I'll respond in this way during the summer or during the winter or in different seasons of life.
Yeah, so there would be things that every day wanting to come to God in some way, some type of prayer, some type of reflection, some type of prayer for others, reading from scripture, reading from poetry that draws us to God, any of these things we might want to do every single day. But there are some things that aren't realistic to engage in all the time. So, for example, some silence and solitude, that might be a fantastic practice. But for most of us, maybe we're just going to put that in a couple of times a year, block out half a day. go to a retreat center. Some things, unless you have a very specific lifestyle, are going to be a bit more infrequent, shall we say.
How do I suppose that for some people, there would be a sense of, I'm not really doing it properly if I only do things infrequently. How is there a benefit in doing something just a couple of times a year?
I think it's about doing the best we can with what we have and what our current season of life is. So something really is better than nothing. And what I find, like, I've been away on a 36-hour silent retreat. That's a yearly practice for me that I get away. But what it encourages me to do then is to bring in micro moments of silence into my more common everyday life. So that it makes me think, I know immediately I'll go for a dog walk, at least for the next few weeks, and not put something in my headphones and just be in quiet and just be with God. The longer time helps me remember what I can more drip feed into my everyday life. Because long times away, you know, as a mum of four, and you know, they're not going to be very often, and that's okay.
So maybe the seasonal practices, as we take them on, almost act as a reset for our everyday practices.
I find that they really do. Yes, definitely.
You're listening to UCB One, and it is the Life Issues podcast. Of course, I'm Paul Hammond. My guest, as I said earlier, is Emma Timms. We're talking about building a rule, a series of practices, a series of opportunities in our daily and in our seasonal life that give us the opportunity to just connect a little more intentionally with God, to maybe break through the noise and the busyness of life and ensure that we are orientated towards Him rather than just drifting through until we're in trouble or we need something and suddenly we want to shout out to our dad. Emma's book is called Faith Habits and How to Form Them. And as we explore all these different practices that are available, some long-term, some, you know, or some every day, some longer periods, which perhaps we do once or twice a year, etc. How do I choose the ones that are right for me? Because there's any number of things that I could look at and go, oh, that would benefit me, Emma. Oh, if I could spend some time, oh, yes, I can see the value of that. But how do I actually get a rule rather than a pick and mix?
I think spending a little bit of time, either on your own with a trusted friend or prayer partner, assessing where you're at, assessing where are the moments in my day, where are the moments in my week, where is a moment in my month, my season, my year, kind of breaking it down like that, which is what I do in the book, noticing where are the spaces where I can integrate practices in a way that is going to work for my reality. I think that's a really good start.
Okay, but I'm going to start then, and I'm going to decide that. I've got my piece of paper in front of me as I'm thinking about it. I've got a copy of your book, or I've taken a look at some of the other sort of rules that there are around. Give me an example of how to put it together.
So I would look at that, look at the spots of where I'm going to put things in. I would look at my why. Why am I doing this? What am I hoping to kind of gain from this with God? And then choosing from that, you could look at this list or any list, ones that I feel would help me get there. So something prayer-based in daily of some kind of union with God, and whatever that looks like for you. If you like to pray out loud, if you just like to be quiet and be in the presence of God, if you like to go through some scripture and kind of seek and see God within that, putting something in and an amount of time as well that is really realistic. So I would always start small because you can always build and add. So going through like that, so find something daily and then weekly, things like a Sabbath. Is there some rest that you can take? Maybe you can't start with 24 hours. You have to start with something smaller, a few hours. Maybe you're a shift worker. So every week on a Sunday night, you look at where that's going to be. It's very unique compared to the looking at the circumstances that you have, and then et cetera, going on through the month. So I think it's, again, choosing life-giving, realistic practices and that fit your life, having somebody to talk to about it and going from there.
And how do I avoid using that flexibility as an excuse to pick things up and drop them rather than having the discipline of, I'm going to, if I might put it like this, make myself do it even when I don't want to do it?
Yeah, we're not great at that anymore, are we? A bit of sort of discipline and commitment. And if you want to train for anything, like if I was training for a marathon, I would need to practice. I would need, if I had a physical goal, I would need to show up to my practice. I guess if we want to be close to God, if we want to be transformed, if we want to operate in the power of the Holy Spirit, we have to train for that. So I think if the motive and the desire is strong enough, that goes a long way. And then putting things in place and actually knowing some of the science behind habit formation helps too. So the fact that it takes around 66 times to form a new habit. So a lot of this, we all have habits. We probably get up and make our drink in the same way each morning. It's the habit. So it takes a bit of time, getting the support, giving ourselves some grace, but also being committed because it's what we want to do. No one's going to make you do this. It is a choice.
So we're talking to actually get this established as a pattern of behavior, which I suppose is what a habit is. The danger is people talk about habits and we often think in terms of bad habits and needing to break them, don't we? But actually building good habits is a positive building block for life. But we're talking about giving ourselves, what, two and a half months then to really get let's round it up. Let's say 3 months, giving ourselves a quarter to really get into this and establish it. And along the way, can we expect a couple of stumbles, expect a couple of lazy days, expect if my experience of exercise is anything to go by? We certainly can.
Absolutely. We're human. This is like anything we do. You know, we're showing up, we're trying our best, we're being prayerful. We are held in God's grace with all of this. And I think we don't want this to become legalism. We want it to become supportive and life-giving for us. So yeah, a season is a really good way to look. And actually one of my practices is each season I review my rule to see how it might need to adapt. For example, at the beginning of summer, this is where for me, because I like to do things kind of properly, I have to let loads of stuff go. The kids are off school. We've got trips. We've got family staying. It's light all the time. I'm up later at night. There's all the social things. And I used to get in such a muddle with this because everything would fall away and then I'd get really frustrated trying to keep it the same. But now I embrace that summer looks different. And so I think, okay, what's a few anchor points to summer that are going to sustain me? And what am I just going to let go to be there in summer? How I need to show up for everyone else that needs me.
Yeah. Yeah, because that is an important point. This isn't about cloistering yourself away from life. It is about intentionally including God in our everyday life and our everyday life experience.
Absolutely.
Are there some people for whom the rigidity of the discipline is an essential part that actually maybe come summer, they need to go, no, I'm not going to change it because the season has changed. I'm going to be rigid about this. I mean, is that a valid understanding of yourself, perhaps, in your personal perspective?
Yeah, I think if some people can make that work, some people's lives don't change as much as well. I think it depends what your life is like. Mine changes quite a lot with family life. That's my reality as a mum of a large family. But some people, they might have quite a routine to their life and they actually don't need it to flex as much. I think probably the people group who this is helpful for is the people where a lot of people rely on you and you actually need to flex. Instead of seeing that as a problem, you can embrace it as part of where God has you in life. And Ronald Rollheiser, in his book, Domestic Monastery, he talks about the fact that like when you're parenting young children, your baby's cry is like the monastery bell. It's the thing that interrupts you that you have to go to. And it's that switch of perspective.
Yeah. And it is the case, as you say, that this is about not about restriction on our lives. It is about focus. Yes?
Yeah, it's about focus. And it's also about a good picture, actually, for a rule of life is a trellis that you have in the garden that will provide support for the flowers to grow up. The trellis isn't the flower. Our life is like the flower. So it's just this support system. And if it's no longer supportive, a practice, then we don't need to keep it. Because this isn't about kind of rules and dead religion. This is about supporting a vibrant, healthy spiritual life and giving ourselves that help that we need.
I think that's a very key point, isn't it? It's about giving ourselves the help that we need. So can we explore a little bit more just before we sort of come to an end of our time, because it is flying by, but I'm really interested to see this idea of seasons and how you talk in your book about the natural seasons of life. And I get a sense that we immediately think that's the season of the year and the changing seasons and summer going into autumn and so on and so forth. But there's also a sense in which we face seasons of activity. We face seasons of role. We face seasons of age and all that. So a lot of that will be maybe seen as a bit of a negative thing in this day and age. And yet you are suggesting that through a flexible rule according to seasons, actually those seasons can be seen as a positive journey.
Yeah, and it's about providing the support that each season requires. So let's say you're a student and you're studying and you're working really, really hard, loads and loads of focused study. Your best way to connect with God might not be sitting for a long time reading the Bible, because you're going to be so tired and so seeing double from all your study. A better practice for you might be to bring the opposite in, to be like, I need to get outside, I need to move, I need to see other people, I need to connect with God that way. And so there is a little bit of bringing a living relationship to this, because our relationship with God can be living and active in our everyday life. So yes, looking at our season, and then this can help. It can help strengthen us in these times.
So how do seasons affect our spiritual life? And to be honest with you, I don't mind which of the seasons you run after in this, whether it's the age or the role or the it's called chronological season of the year. But how do they, why do they affect our spiritual life?
Well, I think this is where we move from religion to relationship, where we can adapt to what's actually going on rather than just sticking to the same thing no matter what. So let's take the natural seasons and the amount of sleep we get. So in winter, we need a little bit more sleep. So maybe we don't get up quite as early for our time with God because we're tired, and that's okay. We have less time and look at something else to support us in winter. And in summer, maybe we're more social and we see people more. So we need a bit more introspective, quiet time with God, and that's okay. So that's the way we can begin to look at natural seasons. And then seasons of life, like I gave the student example, but let's say you're going through a really difficult transition. Maybe you're a woman going through the menopause. Maybe you're moving house and relocating. Maybe you're moving church and you feel really all over the place. Then anything grounding, stabilizing, you might want to keep things the same, some of your practices the same. Every night I reflect on where I've seen God through the day, and I ground myself in his goodness. Maybe you need that. So again, these are the kinds of ways we can adapt to keep always walking with God.
So that it becomes, like you say, that trellis that allows us to grow the flowers up. It is that framework that allows us to put everything in its right place. Again, it is that opportunity to be still and find strength. And as we develop that, is there a sense in which it becomes less of a, I need to do this because I need to do this, I have to structure my life, and it becomes perhaps even more than a habit, it becomes almost an instinct that we do it. So that even at times when we haven't stopped and thought about the change of season, and suddenly a change of season is upon us or a change of circumstance, actually the instinct is to reach for that trellis.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fruit eventually, this integration and flow with God in our spiritual lives. Absolutely.
As we draw to a close, I have two questions for you, which in a sense we've already covered, but it's sometimes good to go back at the end and just remind ourselves, isn't it? The first is, what do I gain from finding my rule of life in terms of my living for those around me?
Well, we gain so much, because the closer you are to God and the more you have that living relationship and God's spirit can flow through you, the more we can bless the lives of everyone we touch and come by, the more we're going to be able to hear those nudges, the more love is going to come out through us. So the more we are strengthened internally, the more everything externally benefits.
And what about the actual starting point then? Because I know we touched on it earlier, but for people who are listening to you today and they are thinking, goodness me, this is, in a sense, this is what I've been missing. I have been just drifting through my spiritual life. I've been just drifting through my relationship with God. I have been just drifting through life without a clear structure that takes me day to day. How do I start? What is the first thing I need to do? What are the first steps that I need to apply off the back of this conversation so that my tomorrow will be different?
I think the first thing I would do is talk to somebody else. Like, I am a spiritual director, and I've had one for quite a few years, and I can't really imagine not having one, but you don't need to have that. A good friend or somebody that you trust and you can talk to already about God. I think going to a good friend and saying, hey, I've heard this stuff, I want to implement some things. Can you help me just as I process and think why I want to do this and what I can do? And you know me, what do you think could be the pitfalls? And just have somebody else. I think that's a really good start.
And of course, it's also a good start to get hold of Emma's book, because it really is a good unpacking of this idea, the idea of a rule of life to take us forward. It's called Faith Habits and How to Form Them by Emma Timms. You can find it online, published by SPCK. The truth is, we live in an on-demand world, don't we? Where so much, from Corrie to cornflakes, is available to us on our own terms. Indeed, on demand, doing it our way, has become almost an aspirational thing. And when you talk to people about watching the television, they all know, I don't watch it. And along with everybody else, I watch it on demand now, as I can suit myself. And in so many places of life, we can take it or we can leave it. We can come back to it later. We can kick it down the road. But does that pick it up when it suits me? When it's convenient for my life, really fit with God's call to deny ourselves, take up our cross and follow him? Does drifting through the day with thought of God only when we're in trouble or when we want something really build the relationship and intimacy he wants with us and he promises to us? What if we made the sacrifice of prioritizing something other than our convenience? What if we built a pattern that gave us reminders, flexible or rigid, of God's presence, power, and purpose in our lives every day? What if we gave him precedence in actual daily living rather than just in theory? What might that do for us, for the consistency of our faith, and most importantly, for what we bring to the table of life's interactions with those around us? You got to wonder, maybe those medieval saints who banged on about a rule of life were onto something. As I said, Emma's book is called Faith Habits and How to Form Them, 21 Seasonal Practices to Strengthen Your Spiritual Life, published by SPCK. Emma, lovely to speak to you about this today. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been brilliant.
And thank you as well to Rebecca, my producer for this week, keeping everything on the straight and narrow. I'm Paul Hammond. Why not join us next week for another Life Issues? Ta-ra!